Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 19th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Friday, folks. Oh, so casual. I'm not even wearing a collared shirt today. That's how casual I've gotten. Digby from the blog Hullabaloo will be joining us. And Judy Gold from the blog judygold.com will be joining us. Meanwhile, a shutdown looms, and it seems the Senate Republicans are in revolt. A shell company was used to buy Stormy Daniels' silence. Now the question is, whose money was it?
Drug dealer. No big deal.
Very possible. And while the Supreme Court temporarily halts North Carolina's redistricting order, probably going to help the Republicans in the midterms. Meanwhile, Democrats in Chicago are looking to boot the incumbent Dan Lipinski. Elected Democrats endorsing a challenger. Good for them. And Trump's bigoted AmeriCorps head goes bye-bye. Puerto Rico rejected by FEMA for a FEMA emergency loan because they've got too much money. U.S. drops some of its charges against the J-20 defendants. 129 of them will go on misdemeanors. However, the felony charges remain. The Ohio Senate passes a fetal tissue burial bill. And sad Chris Christie, now an NVIP. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen.
Be pathetic, Chris.
Yeah, I want to save that story for when Judy gets here, because I know she's extremely excited.
Oh, she's going to be salivating.
She's going to be very, very happy about that story. Just a reminder, this show relies on you, on folks just like you, for its continued existence. By becoming a member of the Majority Report, you support the free show, and we say thank you by giving you extra content daily. Join themajorityreport.com. We are anticipating a special guest at the end of today's show, approximately 2:30.
Looking forward to it.
I will give you a hint. Now, sometimes these things fall apart. There's been times in the past where we anticipated this person calling in, and they did not call in, and usually don't mention anything about it. But I'll give you a little hint. This person is works in the U.S. Senate. There's a hint for you.
Killed the joke there.
And you'll like it. Oh, it's not Barack Obama? What?
Yep. Messed it up.
But why would Barack Obama show up? Why would the Barack Obama voice? Oh, I see what you're saying.
So when you were teasing it before, it's fine.
I'll tell you something. To be honest with you, I mean, if I got a call from Barack Obama's people that said, Barack wants to call in, I'd be like, okay. But I wouldn't be that psyched about it.
Fair enough.
I'm more psyched about this guy calling.
I'd be like, there's a much more interesting version of Barack Obama that appears regularly on this show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, I don't need it.
If we could set up a dialogue between Nation of Islam, Barack Obama, and Barack Obama, that would be really interesting content.
Also, I want to welcome in studio our one of our longest time listeners, Nicole, is here, and she has been responsible. Anything graphically that has looked like it's done by a professional, as opposed to sort of the other ones that we've had, Nicole has been responsible for, going back to the Break Room Live days, wow, ladies and gentlemen. Just a reminder that my favorite mattress in our house, our apartment, is Saul's Casper. And it is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. With three mattress models, the original Casper, that's the one I have, I love it, the Wave, and the Essential, Casper mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Not to mention, the breathable design helps you sleep cool, regulates your body temperature throughout the night. That's my big thing. I need body temperature regulation. Because I get too hot in all circumstances.
No, it was just the accent I liked. You went real mass on that one. It was just like, I need body temperature regulation.
Yes.
My husband says I'm a sweaty Semetti, so maybe that's what you've got going on, too.
A sweaty Semetti? Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, yeah. That seems inappropriate. It's here's the thing. It's delivered I'm sure he means it in a nice way. It's delivered right to your door in a small, how do they do that, size box with free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. But the best part is you can be sure your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free Sleep On It trial. That's right. Sleep on it for 100 nights. If on night 99, you're like, you know, I just don't like it, then you can send it back. But I guarantee you, you're going to love this mattress. Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. You get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/majority and using the code majority at checkout. That's casper.com/majority. Offer code majority for $50 off your mattress purchase. Terms and conditions apply. But you're going to love the mattress. So check it out. All right, let's take a look at this. We've talked about Mark Stein. He fills in for Rush Limbaugh occasionally. He is a Canadian who I believe has been hanging out on our side of the border, somewhere I think up in Vermont.
He lives in Vermont?
That is my belief. And I think he writes also for the National Review. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that is true.
And my feeling is like we have plenty of conservatives here. I'm not sure what he's bringing to the party. Why would we let this guy in? I mean, when you think about the all these Republican immigrants, like Seb Gorka, who is wanted for gun charges. I mean, this is a man who's obviously coming from Hungary.
Keyword, man.
Yes, and we get the worst of them, though. We get the criminals are sent here from Hungary, apparently. That's the problem. But here is Mark Stein, and boy, he's a pleasant fellow. You know, a lot of people think that there's nothing redeeming about a white supremacist. But apparently, according to Mark Stein, there's at least there's one attribute that's pretty good.
Interesting is that both he and Nancy Pelosi and others on that side of the aisle are getting ever more explicit in their preference for illegal immigrants, well, so-called, as he would say, over American citizens. He said, Chris Cuomo went on to say that the real problem is white supremacists in America. They're the real monsters, not these nice, hardworking illegal immigrants. And that may be well and true. I mean, for the purpose purposes of argument, let's just say he's right. It's irrelevant. The white supremacists are American citizens. The illegal immigrants are people who shouldn't be here. And the organizing principle of nation states is that they're organized on behalf of their citizens, whether their citizens are cheerleaders or white supremacists or whatever. You're stuck with them. And this preference that Nancy Pelosi and Chris Cuomo and increasing people have for actually importing a class of citizen that they prefer to the ones they're stuck with is actually very revealing. And in fact, to go back to what your Swedish guest was saying, you know, whatever the economic benefits, which are minimal and are not evenly distributed, the cultural transformation, which is what's happening in Sweden, other parts of Europe, and is what's happening in Arizona too, that's forever. In Arizona, a majority of the grade school children now are Hispanic. That means Arizona's future is as an Hispanic society. That means, in effect, the border has moved north. And the cultural transformation outweighs any economic benefits that that lady was talking about.
I understand.
He was losing his breath at the end. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I mean, he was getting so excited. Well, so let me get this straight. White supremacists are at least citizens, and the important thing is not just about citizenry anymore. It's also about the degradation of our culture, the Latinoizing, the Hispanicizing of our culture. That's the thing we should be worried about. Although not citizenship, right? Like, he's sort of pivoted from all of a sudden citizenship and culture. And, you know, for that guy with that horrible accent to be on my American television talking about
degrading culture.
Degrading culture. Here is a clip of Mark Stein's music video where he is... Yeah, here it is.
Oh, my God.
Go ahead. A putty tat is the name of this song.
No.
That pussycat is very bad. He sneaks up from behind. I don't think I would like it if
what the
I
fuck?
Knew what's on his mind. I have a strong suspicion that his plans for me aren't good. I am inclined to think that he would get me if he could.
He's watching you.
I thought I saw a pussycat creeping up on me. I did. Right. I saw
this. Okay. Is real?
This is real. All right, so listen. The fact that this dude could get on television and even dare to speak about the degradation of our culture while he's putting this out.
I would prefer to live in a building exclusively occupied by me and El Salvadoran hit squads and listen to another second of that shit. Are you out of your mind?
You know,
the balls of these people.
It's unbelievable.
Really. But no, but like, it actually is. I'm totally past the unbelievable point.
Hold
completely
on, wait
always.
A second. No, you see, it's all, he only sings about cats.
This album is called Feline Groovy Songs for Swinging Cats.
Oh my God.
And I can't tell if it's...
I was snoozing on the sofa when she came in from work. She started baby talking and she sure didn't shirk. How's mama's pookie wookie? How's a big sweetie pie? I kinda smiled and I opened one eye. Yeah, mama's gone, get lovey-doveys, had a hard day. I was just
okay, we've had to stop. I think I might sprain my jaw.
On behalf of someone who likes to sing songs and change the words to make them about cats, I am offended that he is disrespecting our traditions in this way. Also, if anything, I think these videos are going to make people like Pelosi want to take it a step further.
No
for
kidding.
Every illegal immigrant from the Latin diaspora that we allow into the country, we're going to deport one white supremacist.
Yes, I think that's probably where we should go.
Build a wall in Canada.
Exactly.
Build a wall on Mark Stein.
All right.
Like literally a contained wall for one person so he can't speak or interact with other humans. He should be in a walking solitary confinement. That is the most bizarre.
I don't know.
Nothing surprises me. There's nothing. People can come in today and be like, hey, you know, Trump like peed on the ambassador today and said, yeah, I do deals with Russians. And by the way, people say I hate Haitians. You know how much money I laundered for the Duvaliers? Totally unfair. And I'd be like, yeah, of course. That's not surprising. That was shocking.
All right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton or Digby. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Heather Parton, or as you may know her from her blog, Hullabaloo, Digby. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Sam. Happy Friday.
Yes, it's another week in the era of Trump, and a fairly interesting end to this week, and one which we don't necessarily know yet, I guess, and that is the government going to be operating tomorrow?
Yeah, we've got quite a cliffhanger here. I mean, let me just, you know, say for the record that I knew from the very beginning that the House was going to pass whatever Paul Ryan put in front of them, including the Freedom Caucus, because they are this idea that somehow they have principles and that there are these, you know, right-wingers in the House who just really care about deficits, et cetera, was a crock. They're now all full-fledged, you know, Trumpies. So I knew that was going to happen. So now all the action is in the Senate, where I think we, you know, anybody watching closely knew it was going to end up because, you know, they've got a very narrow margin. And we're looking at a showdown in the Senate that looks like it's going to go on throughout the night. I was just watching TV and saw Mitch McConnell saying that Democrats are going to own this craziness. And I'm kind of going, guys, you've got a patent on that brand right now, okay? When it comes to craziness, that I think most Americans are going to know who the crazy people are. It's pretty clear.
Well, let's just stay in the House for 1 second. So there were only six Democrats who voted for the continuing resolution, which was actually less than I thought it would be.
Me too, because Nancy had actually freed people.
Yep.
You know, that once the Republicans had the vote, she said, hey, do what you think you need to do to, you know, to keep your seat. And only six went, which I thought was really surprising. Yeah, I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, two were from Texas. Two were from California. I don't necessarily follow that.
They're suicidal. That's all you can say about them.
Honestly. And one from New Jersey. I mean, not anybody I really knew. Peterson from Minnesota. There were, I guess, about 8 or 10 Republicans who said no. And, you know, Jones was one of them. He votes. That's the way he always votes, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple other, I think, you know, Amash and a couple other supposed, you know, serious conservatives. And then some who I think were like, you know, Ross Layton in Florida. I think maybe she was just like, I don't want a part of this. I don't know. But so we go to the House and already, I mean, excuse me, in the Senate. And just to explain this to people. In the House, you know, Democrats don't have to participate. They could have just avoided engaging in this at all by voting no. In the Senate, Democrats have to actively filibuster the bill, you know, to avoid a to basically kill this. And so that means that they could theoretically lose 9 votes in the Senate and still prevent this from coming to the floor. But it sounds like now Lindsey Graham and Jeff Flake as well. But Lindsey Graham is the one who's going to make a real show of this, that he is not going to vote for it. He said he is just what's amazing is Lindsey Graham has already become John McCain. In the sense that he is really mad because his deal got rejected. And you could talk about this. I know you've written about Lindsey Graham's sort of grand adventure with Trump. And now he's pissed. And now he's pretending like it's not regular order. I'm tired of these 30-day continuing resolutions, when in fact he's basically saying, like, I was treated poorly.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, he is very unhappy about this because he worked. Well, first of all, he pretty much, you know, flushed years and years of hard-won reputation as, you know, an independent guy who speaks truth to power, right it down the toilet, down the S-hole, when he started cultivating Trump last summer and basically became his chief toady and courtier by, you know, look at his great, he's got a great golf swing, he's so intelligent, he's such a great guy, nobody should call him a kook, he's, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he did all this in order to curry favor with Trump and, you know, quote, gain his trust and be the guy, the power behind the throne. I think he really, you know, Lindsey Graham, like John McCain, as you point out, really thinks highly of himself and figures that he's the guy who could fix this Trump problem by gaining his trust and flattering him. He decided he needed to do that. Well, it obviously did not work. And, Graham actually cares about immigration. That's one of his big causes. He's been trying to get an immigration deal for a long time. To his credit, you know, he, even though he's a right winger, he really wants to do something that makes, you know, that both sides can at least agree on, and certainly on DACA. So, you know, to his credit, he really thought he was going to be able to do this, that he had the credibility, that Trump trusted him. And of course, we all know the story of what happened. They went in with a deal, and Trump had been worked up into a frenzy by John Kelly and the rest of the hardline right wingers. And he exploded into a vulgar tirade. And that was that. And that's why we are where we are today. Had that not happened last week, they would have had a deal and they could have gotten through this whole thing and everybody would go, gee, you know, look how smoothly the government's running all of a sudden. Instead, Trump had a tantrum. And a tantrum that was ginned up by people like Tom Cotton and Bob Goodlatte in the House. And these are super immigration hardliners who basically want to end legal immigration. This isn't really about DACA or anything else. They have a really, really hardline agenda written out by Stephen Miller and Jeff Sessions in a handbook that was put out. Everybody can read it. It's called The Immigration Handbook for the Republican Majority, and it was written in January of 2015. It's online. You can go look at it. It tells you exactly what these people are trying to do. Anyway, that's where Lindsey Graham, he got stabbed in the back, and he is pouting now. And he's upset, and he is making it impossible between he and Flake. And McCain is missing, too. He's not there. They can't get to 50 votes. And So Mitch McConnell can sit here and tell the, you know, I mean, the Democrats could theoretically say, no, we're not going to filibuster. You take care of it, Mitch. Go ahead. Get your thing away. You know, they could do that. I don't know if they're going to. It's a big risk because who would ever trust Lindsey Graham or Jeff Flake? But nonetheless, that is, you know, where we're sitting right now, we're looking at a Mitch McConnell who cannot round up a majority, a bare majority, much less 60 votes. And, you know, sorry, I think everybody in the country can see what's happening there.
And, I mean, give me your sense of what I understand is that, and I've heard, is that if the Democrats in the Senate feel they're going to get blamed for the shutdown, that they'll cave. And, you know, the blame is not just in that moment, right? I mean, there's the shutdown happens, but then theoretically it could be ongoing. And so there has to be an ongoing effort to make sure from the perspective of the Democrats that the Republicans are taking the blame for this. I know polling right now shows that most people would blame the Republicans, and why wouldn't they? They control both branches of government. But it's, I mean, you could have the filibuster, right? And then still say this is just a function. It doesn't matter anyways, because Flake and Graham, like, just, you know, leverage that, right? I guess, because this seems to me to be about who the press thinks is to blame. And less so than in the past, there seems to be more inclination to not blame the Democrats.
Well, at least, I mean, I see a little bit of that where, the, you know, the press, they get very self-righteous and go, well, why don't the Democrats step up and do the, you know, why can't they govern, you know, the usual nonsense. But I'm seeing less of it than usual, as you point out. And I do think that, you know, Mitch McConnell standing up in front of, you know, on the floor of the Senate saying, you know, Democrats will own this craziness, that just does not track with the American people. I mean, it just doesn't. The craziness, everybody knows where that's coming from. Now, having said that, I don't think that the Democrats have made a very strong case for that yet. Now it's hard for them to get any airtime. There's so much stuff going on that I know it's difficult for them to even get a chance, you know, a platform to say much about all this. But if the shutdown happens, they'll be on TV and they'll be challenged. And I'm fairly hopeful, especially if they hold the line. You know, if it's not a matter of a few red state Democrats peeling off and they just can't get to 60.
Right.
If it's actually they just hold the line all the way, I think they have a strong case to just make. Hey, look, you know, that we weren't asking for much. We want to save some kids. Is that too much? You know, you couldn't let us save some kids. That's all we're talking about. And I do think that the American public understands that it's the Democrats who want to save the DACA kids, and it's the Democrats who want to get the CHIP program funded. Those are Democratic priorities. Nobody's going to mistake that for something Republicans really want, and the Democrats won't let them have it. I mean, they can try that sort of phony stuff, but I don't think it'll fly. But I mean, hopefully the Democrats come up with a strong set of points that they can elucidate for the press and keep them on board, because the press is, of course, not trustworthy in this sort of thing.
Right, and they're the only constituency that matters in some respects, because it seems to me the people, just voters or citizens or, you know, poll respondents, they're not going to dig into the sort of the nitty gritty of the process, right? They're just going to take the top line evaluation of the media. They're not going to say, well, you know, the Democrats are filibustering, and you know, Flake and Graham, you know, they're not making this level of analysis. You know, there's no huge group of, let's say, undecided voters who are that into the process part of this, that they're making that analysis. It's just going to be a function of the media and the way that the media tells this story. And I guess that's going to be that's basically what it's going to come down to. It's just, you know, as long as Lindsey Graham and Jeff Flake are out there saying, I'm not voting for this, then they don't even have 50 votes. They don't even have 50. Yeah. Never mind 60.
They don't. Yeah, if they can't get to a, I mean, everybody understands that, right? I mean, look, if you can't get all of your own people on board, you know, which the House successfully did, and I, you know, that was a line that was being used in the House, and I think everybody was focused on that. This idea that, you know, oh, the Freedom Caucus, they're gonna put a
right, throw, we're gonna wrangle them, and it's really hard.
Yeah, we've got to really give them. They don't want to do it because of the debt and blah blah blah. And I'm just sitting there rolling. I'm going, no, you're living in the past. That the Freedom Caucus is not a group of principled conservatives. Okay, they're a group of right wingers, and basically their function in life is to, you know, be the worst, most far-right caucus in the House. And in this sense, in this case, that means that they are on the side of Donald Trump and, you know, Paul Ryan, that they're going to do what they're told. That is, Mark Meadows, the head of the House Freedom Caucus, is on the horn with Trump constantly. They're close. So I knew that was going to happen. But in the Senate, it is a little different. And we've seen that's where everything is hung up so far, right? I mean, we had they did have that brief little hiccup in the House where Ryan couldn't pass the Obamacare repeal, and then right. He came back and got it done. So he learned his lesson. He figured out how to do it. But in the Senate, they got hung up. They couldn't do it. Everything's been very dramatic. It's all about trying to wrangle just a couple of recalcitrant Republicans over process, or in some cases over substance. But whatever, that's been the game we've seen, and we're back there again. And we had one case, the Obamacare case, where they failed. And then we had the tax cuts where they succeeded. Now, you know, we'll see what happens here. And of course, they have to get 60. I mean, I think if they get over 50, the Democrats will, I think they'll filibuster. I mean, maybe not, but I can't see it going without a filibuster. And somebody will, right? I mean,
it's hard to imagine that Democrats are going to would join the Republicans, and I guess the only argument is, like, it's only a 30-day continuing resolution. Like, we'll be back here again in, you know, February 16th or whatever it is. We're going to be back here again for the exact same fight. Now, we should also say that there's, you know, almost 900,000 people will be impacted by this directly in the event that there's a government shutdown. I mean, you have a lot Correct. Of government workers who, I mean, they'll keep essential workers on. That's like air traffic controllers and, you know, Forest Service fighters, and I guess, you know, I don't know, food
and
safety.
And the military. And,
yeah. Military, you know. And, you know, so, like, essential services. But you'll have almost 900,000 federal workers who will be furloughed and probably never get that pay back, right? I mean, this is what the Republicans are going to do. They're not going to fund these people in retrospect. And so you're going to see, like, you know, there's going to be foreclosures. There's going to be people who are, who are going to deal with some real deprivation. And that's a hard thing to be, I think, aware of and vote, you know, against this funding bill, frankly.
Well, it is hard. And that's one reason why it was important that Senators Tim Kaine and Mark Warner, Virginia, which is where I think that there's a majority. Well, I don't know if it's a majority, a
plurality, probably, at least.
Yeah. A large number of them are federal workers. And when they came out and said they wouldn't vote for it, that was meaningful, because that's usually been a place where that gets hung up. And for exactly for the reasons you're talking about. I mean, this is real people, their constituents that they are having to, you know, go to and say, hey, look, we had to do this because, you know, there was a bigger principle at stake here, and we had to take a stand in this moment. And the fact that they did it, you know, neither Kaine or Warner are, you know, hard hardcore lefties. I mean, they're both pretty, you know, sort of mainstream, middle-of-the-road types. For them to do that and to come out, I think that meant something. That was like saying, look, we're going to prepare to have to go defend this to a constituency that's going to be personally affected if this government shuts down, and we're prepared to do that. And that you know, that does take some guts. So I think that did mean something. I mean, and of course, you know, we're all looking at people like John Tester, Claire McCaskill, Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly. These are all red state Democrats who are up for re-election this year. And they are in places that Donald Trump won. So, you know, that's the group that is being, you know, pressured, needless to say, to go along with this. And so far, so far we have not seen them, you know, come out and say, you know, and hedge much on this. And that's been true throughout the year. You know, I mean, Democrats have hung in. And by the way, you know,
extend that point. There was also, I was very surprised not to see a Virginia Democrat on that list in the House, because they, you know, surely there's a district or two there where, you know, a significant portion of their constituents are working for the government or are going to be furloughed. And I was really surprised by that as well.
It's, you know, look, I mean, I think we're all surprised to see Democrats actually, you know, hanging together.
Exactly.
And you know, sort of taking a principled stand, and, you know, and using their collective power in a way to make this strong statement. I mean, this is just not something we're used to seeing. It's not the opposition party that the Democrats used to be. I mean, the worst thing about having a Democratic opposition was the fact that, you know, only half of them were ever actually the opposition.
Right.
And that's it. That, you know, in this Trump era and this era of polarization, that so far has not been true. And you know how tempting it must be for a lot of these people to go. It's the easier route, and you can get a lot of you know, kudos and high fives from, you know, conservatives. If you do that, they're very happy to welcome any Democratic apostate into their crowd. So, you know, this has been a very interesting thing to watch, and you know, so far so good in the Senate. And you know, I understand the pressures that they're under, but this, you know, there's something about this issue, I really think, that has got Democrats. I mean, look, they made a good faith effort to do a compromise. They really did. They tried very hard. Going back to September when Nancy and Chuck had their meeting with Trump and they came away believing that they had a deal, that fell apart. Then more recently, this deal with Durbin and Trump and the Republicans treating Dick Durbin, who I think is highly respected in the Democratic caucus. It was very insulting what he said and did and what they all did. Tom Cotton coming out and saying Dick Durbin's a liar. You know, this did not go down well. And you know how the Senate, you know, apparently is this club, you know, these people are very much believe that they operate on a higher level. I mean, whether they do or not. But I think that was offensive to them on a personal level. And on a substance level, they were prepared to give up some pretty, you know, important, you know, principles to try and get this deal done for DACA. I mean, getting rid of this family reunification or even, you know, kind of whittling it away is very important. I mean, this is something Democrats believe in. I believe in it. I mean, family reunification is an important principle for American immigration, and they want to end it. And, you know, the Democrats were willing to do that. They were willing to talk about the wall. They were willing to do a lot of things. And they just keep getting kicked in the teeth by Donald Trump and these hardcore right wingers. They don't have a lot of incentive, even the ones in the red states, to go along with this. I mean, there's everything, you know, has to be saying to them, look, you know, the minute that I start capitulating to Donald Trump, my own support in the Democratic Party is going to completely, you know, dissolve, because the Democratic base is active, energized, and they are angry. And the idea of Heidi Heitkamp suddenly going along with Tom Cotton, I just think, you know, okay, Heidi, I hope you get every Republican vote, because the Democrats aren't going to come out for you.
Well, this is what I've been saying through the ACA fight, too, that I mean, and maybe the caucus has changed a little bit, and, you know, there are other sort of contextual reasons. But the bottom line is, the difference between Donald Trump and President Rubio is that Donald Trump actually disciplines the Democratic caucus more than any other Republican would. And because he's so toxic, so unpopular, and that Democrats just they don't care. Even in a state where he's popular, they know they can't get away with it. All right. Well, let's turn for a moment. And I guess we're going to find out, you know, tonight if it's going to pass in the Senate. And then if it doesn't, I guess, you know, we're into next week and we'll see. I'm not convinced that Donald Trump and maybe Stephen Miller, I'm not convinced that they don't. I don't want to say well, they may very well be welcoming a government shutdown. It seems to me that doesn't mean necessarily that it's going to benefit them. But I mean, you know, why not? If you're Trump, it's like, you know, it's like why not?
He said it. He said it twice. He said, you know, maybe we need a good government shutdown. Maybe that's what we need. You know, and he's an effing moron. We know that. So he doesn't understand the ramifications of this politically or substantively. But, you know, I think, sure. And I think Stephen Miller's happy to have this fight over DACA. I mean, he really wants to deport all those kids.
Right.
He wants to. So, you know, yeah, I think you're right. I think there's at least some portion of their, to the extent there's a strategy, and in Trump's case, I doubt there's much of one, but to the extent that they have any thoughts on this beyond the next 5 minutes, I think they welcome it. I think they're fine with it. But they're alone out there. I don't think most Republicans want this. This is not going to accrue to their benefit.
I agree with that. All right, well, let's talk about something else that has accrued to someone else's benefit. Stormy, what's her last name? Stormy Daniels. Now, so everybody knows this story, I believe, and there's more coming out, but Stormy Daniels is an adult film actress, and supposedly, I guess it was back in 2006, she allegedly had an ongoing affair with Donald Trump, which I know is sort of just gross to even have to articulate. But and the idea being, supposedly the reason why they're so worried about this being such a bombshell is that because Donald Trump was married at the time, and this is an illicit affair, and
how dare he? I am shocked.
Yeah, I'm shocked too. Like, she must be the only one he ever had an affair with. Maybe it was true love, and they were so compelled. But nevertheless, what has come out is that there was an interview that she gave back in 2011 before she signed an NDA, which apparently was signed in the waning weeks of the 2016 election. This is also strange. In the waning weeks of the 2016 election, like literally with weeks to go, she was paid $130,000 through a Delaware-based LLC, which is in you incorporate or you form an LLC. I'm not sure if it was an S corp or an LLC, but nevertheless, you do this in Delaware because it affords you a lot more anonymity than doing it in some other state. Now, apparently, Trump's lawyer Cohen, not that bright, could have had a representative, didn't want to. So there's obviously pretty easy to trace it to him. But there's a couple of questions here. And I pose them to you, Digby. A, where did the money come from? B, what is it that she's getting paid for? Like, there's a 2011 interview out there detailing the fact that they had an affair. And so, I mean, presumably somebody knew this. This could have been dug up. What is it that she's actually being paid to keep quiet is a question. And here's another question for you. I'm sitting here and I'm looking at a list of what you've written the past week on Salon. And as I'm strolling through, you know, there's who gave the money to the NRA to help Trump. We can talk about that because the NRA spent an enormous amount of money for them in this race, mm-hmm. in a race that everybody presumed that Donald Trump was losing. And that's not, you have to wonder, like, where did they get that money that they're willing to expend? But the next thing is sloppy Steve Bannon now Trump's biggest problem? And it occurs to me, where did this story come from? And now that Steve Bannon is out in the outside, like, where did this story come from? So, are we looking at Steve Bannon? I mean, is Steve Bannon doing this Stormy thing?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's very interesting. I mean, the story broke in a Murdoch paper, right? I mean, it was in the Wall Street Journal. It was those reporters in the Wall Street Journal who dug up these facts that showed that Trump's lawyer Michael Cohen had paid off Stormy Daniels in the days before the election in 2016. And then they dug up these details that you just outlined about the incorporating in Delaware, and he incorporated two different companies and then only ended up using one and nobody really understands why, et cetera, et cetera. Very interesting. Now, you posed a question why he didn't find someone else, you know, some kind of a cutout to do this, which would have made this very, you know, very hard to trace who it was. My personal belief is because he didn't trust anybody. There was nobody they could trust with this information, which indicates to me that that what is being covered up and what the other question you posed, why would they do this? I mean, it was already out in the election, you know, during the cycle that he had treated women like pigs and that he walked into the dressing rooms of the Miss USA pageant and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this was not a porn star coming forward at the end of the, you know, of the cycle. I don't know that.
And saying I had an affair with Donald Trump.
I had an affair with Donald Trump 10 years ago. It's like everybody would have gone, yeah, well, what else is new? Right. I mean, it just seems to me like that wouldn't have been something that would have required them to go to great lengths to try and cover that particular thing up when everything else that was out there was already out there, right?
Right.
So apparently a lot of news organizations had been working on this. They had Fox News had the story, Slate had the story. There were a number of them who were out there, and obviously the Wall Street Journal. And they didn't go with it because she ended up not, you know, she signed this non-disclosure agreement, took the money, we now know, and that was the end of that. But, you know, as you point out, this story was already out there. In Touch had written about it in 2011, and, you know, there was actually more to the story, which we've just found out last night, that Stormy Daniels had been she's from Louisiana, and she had, remember the David Vitter story, you know, where he got caught by the D.C. madam, and mm-hmm. we used to call him Diaper Dave, right?
Right.
Know, he had been using, and he was a, you know, nice right-wing Christian boy who'd been, you know, wearing diapers and had been, you know, this was his kink. And all of that was revealed. He was a senator from Louisiana. He's now a lobbyist, of course. Stormy Daniels decided she was going to run against him in Louisiana back then in 2006. And she started talking to a bunch of political people in Louisiana. She was pretty serious. She did a listening tour. She was going to be in politics. And in the course of that, she told other people about Donald Trump and the affair that they had and gave some details about that affair that show that Donald Trump, he may not have been wearing diapers, but he was a little more kinky than anybody knew. In fact, she told one story that he liked to be spanked and that he was like wanted her to spank him with a copy of Forbes magazine that had his picture and pictures of his kids on the front.
Ooh.
And people went back and looked, and there was such a Forbes magazine that
yes,
exists
in fact,
right in the time period.
We're looking at it right now. not presumably the actual magazine that spanked his ass, but
right.
a facsimile of the cover.
Can I take a moment to gloat about how close I was yesterday in my guess? Like
Jamie had him pegged as spanky guy
from adult baby incest play. So we'll see what else comes up.
Yeah, who knows what he needs to, you know, to get him excited. He did tell Stormy Daniels that, you know, she reminded him of his daughter.
Yes.
That was in the In Touch interview.
That's not...
In any case, you know, setting aside... I mean, yeah, you know, I can't help but enjoy...
relationship that you have with a woman. You always look to have a relationship with a woman who reminds you of your daughter. That's classic.
Yeah, that's so normal. Well, you know, I, you know, you can't help but enjoy all this just on the purely, you know, kind of sick and twisted side of Donald Trump. But there's a bigger issue here, and I think it's really what makes this story something that goes beyond just, you know, our own purient interest. And that is the fact that Donald Trump has been, you know, accused of potentially having been compromised by the Russian government. And that was in the Steele dossier. That was the big salacious detail about that he had been filmed with prostitutes when he was there in 2013 for the Miss Universe pageant.
Right.
And that's been the detail that he has denied most vociferously, right? I mean, he has been absolutely, I would never do it. And he said he wouldn't do that because he's a germaphobe. And everybody knows that a germaphobe would never do, you know, some kind of humiliating, degrading, dirty thing like what is alleged in the Steele dossier. Well, what this story about Stormy Daniels does reveal, and it, you know, there seems to be so much evidence that it actually happened that I, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say it happened, is that Donald Trump was having sex with an adult film actress, and according to Stormy Daniels in the In Touch interview, he did not use protection, and that indicates to me that his excuse about being a germaphobe doesn't hold water. That at least when it comes to sex, Trump is not someone who is adverse to, you know, exposing himself to germs. Let's put it that way. Stormy Daniels is you know, she performed in pornography and had many, many partners. So, and now we find out through this other story that's gotten out about her Louisiana Senate run that he had some kinky habits. This means that, you know, I had never thought before that much about the Golden Showers story. I didn't care. But
no, I thought about it a lot.
Here we have Trump paying off a porno actress a week before the election, and now we know that he is one who was, you know, involved in some sexual escapades that were... you know, we're kinky. So, you know, it just lends credence to that story that wasn't there before.
I don't want to be a killjoy, but I just want to remind folks that the testing standards for people in the adult film community are actually quite high.
Oh, without a doubt.
But they are.
A germaphobe, regardless of whether, I mean, a germaphobe, you would imagine, would not be as, would have some reluctance.
This is the guy who says he can only eat fish fillets because he knows that he won't be poisoned. You know, fillet of fish from McDonald's because he won't be poisoned. That's his excuse anyway. No, of course. I mean, Stormy Daniels, I'm sure she's perfectly healthy. It's just that someone like Trump, if he is this kind of germaphobe that he purports to be, that would be, in my view, that would be something he'd be concerned
I used to go over a lot of the health reports, and so I was fully aware of the fact that and in that industry that folks get checked out. So, he wasn't necessarily trying to hide anything because it would undercut a defense about the Steele dossier, because that hadn't come out really, had it? Had that come out? The Pete stuff had not come out prior to the election.
It had not come out,
okay.
But he knew about it. They had. Remember, James Comey came and pulled him aside and told him, they knew about it.
No, but that didn't happen until after he was elected. Comey didn't go to him until after he was elected. So, I mean, to pay off Stormy Daniels beforehand was not a, I can't get it out there that I'm not actually a germaphobe. It is, there had to be, whatever it was that she was going to tell had to be, you know, important enough for him to drop that type of cash if it was his. You know, in that last week or two, I'm surprised by that. I just like they're just, I'm just surprised that, you know, I don't know. There's something about it that just doesn't track, and I just don't know what it is. But, you know, they all thought that he wasn't going to win. Maybe they thought like I got to pay another $120,000 to maintain within a 6-point, you know, difference, or that, you know, somehow. like I just can't. There's something in there that just doesn't track, and that's what I'm finding so confusing about it. And I also, again, I wonder, you know, is this the only, if they're in the habit of paying $130,000 to a adult film actress so that she doesn't talk? I mean, are we to believe that they didn't pay anybody else?
And if Bannon said they paid 100 women.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that, like, I keep coming back to, look, Steve Bannon would have known about this, right? I mean, he is running the campaign at that point. He would have known about this. This would have been something that would have been not just brought to Trump, because Trump would have been like, "What? Whatever." He would have known about this. And the fact that he's on the outside and all of a sudden we know about this story, right, as opposed to some other story, just leads me to believe that there's something here that I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little bit too conspiratorial minded these days. But I just think that, look, Steve, the idea that Steve Bannon is not out there now every day, every waking moment, thinking about what he can do to screw over these people is hard for me to imagine.
You know it.
Right? I mean, of course.
You know it.
And
I mean, I wrote that in the piece that I wrote about Sloppy Steve. You know, he had this strange session with the House Intelligence Committee this week in which he allegedly claimed executive privilege, and then the White House says, no, we never told him that. We just told him to, you know, be discreet, and it just went back and forth. It's very complicated. But in the course of this thing where Bannon's in there for 10 hours and he's refusing to talk and he had to subpoena him and all that, he let slip one little thing, and oops, the one little thing that he let slip was that he'd had a conversation with Spicer, Priebus, and Mark Carollo, who ended up quitting over the cover-up. He was the legal spokesman, that he had a conversation with them about the Trump Tower meeting. Oops. You know, I mean, it's like one of those things where I said this in my piece for Salon, I'm going, yeah, what's the likelihood that he would, by mistake, drop a hint that he knows things about the central issue involved in the campaign committing collusion with the
right.
Russian government? Just that one little thing is the only thing. Oops, gosh, did I say that? You know, so yeah, I think you're right. I think that Bannon may very, you know, the whole tone of my piece was about, you know, I'm going, why would you, you know, here you have a guy who knows everything. You insult and you find out that he's been loose-lipped with Michael Wolff. Instead of just saying, oh, the book is fiction, Steve Bannon didn't say that stuff, or whatever, or that's crazy Steve, you know, he says crazy stuff all the time, and just let it go. Instead, calling him, saying he's lost his mind, and then getting him fired and losing his place in the movement that he helped create. You know, a man with a lot of ammunition and nothing to lose is a very dangerous man.
Right.
And,
and that to me sounds like him signaling to them. I think you and I spoke about this on Ring of Fire. I think Bannon knows, like, hey, man, I'm not going in and telling that congressional committee anything, because I know how much it gets back to the White House. I'll just wait until I get to Mueller, so that nobody in the White House knows what I'm willing to say to Mueller. And on top of that, like, it's quite possible that this whole Stormy Daniels thing is also him basically signaling, like, hey, guys, don't forget, I know where all the bodies are buried. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but it sure does make sense, doesn't it? Why now?
Why now? Why are we finding out about this now? You know, who's tipping off the Wall Street Journal? Look, there was 10,000 LLCs filed that day in Delaware.
Wow.
And, You don't just randomly come across these LLCs unless somebody has told you to look there. So somebody's telling them, right? They have a source on this. This is not, we just did some, you know, just dug this up like, hey, maybe there was an LLC in Delaware filed, you know, weeks before the election to keep somebody who had already done an interview, you know, from talking. Like, they got a tip. And it's just right now, you got to bet, like, if somebody had that tip, why wait a year to tell them about it? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I get a feeling that that's coming from Bannon. And and there's a reason why, that there's information there that they are, that they're probably sweating a little bit in the White House right now. And it's not just that, you know, I don't think Melania is like, oh, my God, Donald hasn't been faithful to me. Now, maybe I don't want to be a cynic, folks, but and I would be equally surprised if she cared, frankly.
Yeah, me too. I was just going to say the same thing.
But who knows? But all right, interesting week, Digby. And you know, there is more than just the salacious aspects of that Stormy Daniels. I have a
feeling.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
One wonders, you know, she was hanging out with him for a while. One wonders what maybe she actually saw. You know, it's like maybe the sex was just a pretext to keep her to be quiet.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? But there's something there. A lot of it just doesn't really track.
That's right.
And you're absolutely right. And, you know, there's Steve Bannon sitting out there going, yeah, go ahead. Call me crazy.
Exactly. Heather, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. Enjoy your weekend.
I will do my best. Digby, ladies and gentlemen, Digby. All right. Now, listen, we're going to take a quick break.
Do you want Jimmy now?
Oh, should we play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. And then, I'm going to call Judy. Right. Okay.
It's a minute 12.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we'll play it after Judy, because I'm a little bit late for Judy. So we'll just take a quick break, and then when we come back, Judy Gold. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Don't forget, folks, Jamie is running a DSA party this weekend. Where is it, Jamie?
It's at Transpicos, which is kind of on the borderline between Bushwick and Ridgewood off the Halsey stop on the L train. Very easy to
get
to.
Is there a website that people can check out?
Yes. There is a Facebook event you could search for. It's public. It's called Now is the Winter of Our Discotheque, which I wish I could take credit for, but I can't.
There you go.
We've got some real music people DJing.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about it. I just wanted to make sure that we got it out there now. We'll talk a little more after Judy.
All right.
All right. And speaking of which, our next guest has her own theme song. I don't know if she knows this.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find a worthy of a song. Well, Judy.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding.
Yes, Judy Gold.
Oh my God, I can't believe I have children. I mean, how embarrassing is that?
Oh, my God. Listen, are you kidding? It's fantastic.
First of all, whatever thing is happening in Bushwick this weekend, if you think the L train is even going to be working, you're, you know, full of shit. Okay?
Normal service. It's normal service.
What?
Everyone says we have the best service.
Yeah, quote unquote.
The L train's great.
Judy, listen, how are you?
I'm really, first of all, that he's talking to a bunch of anti-abortionists about family, prayer. I mean, how many fucking abortions has he paid for? How many?
Donald Trump, I would imagine, quite a few.
I think that's giving him so much credit.
I can't believe that this guy, like the Stormy Daniels, the Goodwill Humping, like nothing. And there's women who are sitting there, oh, yeah, you know, he says he's politically incorrect. It's like, what is wrong with you? What, like, seriously, what is wrong with you? That if your husband said that, you'd be like, get the fuck out of the house. But your president, what if your kid said, acted like that? You'd punish the kid. You know, it's not, and they sit there with their, you know, and now he's just politically, and I just love he says what he thinks. And we all think it. No, we don't, asshole. We don't all think it. Okay? I feel like I have to go around the Upper West Side and apologize to every Haitian in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Can't take it. So embarrassing.
We have a clip of him just speaking about abortion. Let's play some of this.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only 7 countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the 9th month.
It That's is wrong.
What? It has
That's
to change. Americans are more and more pro.
Wait. Will you go back? Did he just say the laws are such now that a baby is allowed to be born from his mother's womb?
The laws are what we were working on.
Is that what he just said?
There was a directive. You got a year.
North Korea and others.
Listen.
Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the 9th month. It is wrong.
Yeah.
My understanding is that is actually the law in every state in the country, that you're allowed to be born from your mother's womb.
That has been going on for a really long time.
even in North Korea.
Like, I think that, actually, I got to talk to my kids, but I'm pretty sure that they were in there for 9 months.
He's so
interesting.
He is, even he, I think, is like, I can't believe these things are coming out of my mouth to the point where I'm actually going to say the law is that you're allowed to be born from your womb.
Like, I don't think like the legality of it made a difference to him.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think he's so
antithesis to him.
I think he's so, I think he's literally flummoxed by the fact that he's actually up there saying.
But I'm saying, like, even if it was illegal, he would still, if we're accepting the premise that he paid for abortions, he would, like, get them done anyways. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't care.
Why didn't his mother have an abortion? Why?
Because she did a great job.
Well, for all we know, that maybe she had a bunch after him.
I would. I'd be like, I can't have another one of this crap coming out of me.
Have you seen a picture of his mother, Judy?
What?
Have you seen a picture of her?
Oh, the hair is just
big resemblance there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
These anti-quote abortionists, do they think that people who are pro-choice get up and are like, you know what, I have no plans today. I think I'll get an abortion. Like, what do they think goes on? If you are against abortion, and don't have a fucking abortion. Don't have one, okay? But don't tell another person what to do. Don't, with their body. It's like, it's so... oh my God. It was already settled. The thing has been settled. MoveOn.org.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressively craven, I think, how, you know, the leadership of the Republican Party pretends that they care about this. And the interesting thing is going to be, when do we start to see the Supreme Court attack this full on? I think we're just one justice away. And
we are.
And Anthony,
look at him. He's just, oh, I hate him. Sorry. I had the TV on.
No, what else you been up to this week?
Hey, Stormy, what are you doing today? You want an abortion?
Okay, so my brother was visiting, and, you know, he's like, you get so worked up about there are people who are just like, okay, whatever. And it's like, I am so incensed. And, you know, my mother used to always say, Judith, why are you getting your blood pressure up so much? It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable what is going on in this country. And that Paul Ryan is the Democrat. You're such a fucking weeble fucking... I hate you. And Mitch McConnell, seriously. Like, these people are... And Pence. Pence is in love with Trump. You see the way he looks at him?
Yes,
he just
strange.
Stares at him like, oh my God. Oh, I just want to have anal with you. You're going to be out soon and I'm going to be president. You know, it's... Who are these people? Who are they?
There's a relentlessness. I mean,
Mike's obsessed with me. He wants anal
totally
with me. He wants prayer with me.
He wants me
it's
thrown
just
out.
Overwhelming.
He wants me thrown in. He doesn't even know what he wants. It's all over the place.
He wants to be dominated. He wants to dominate. I can't get straight with him. No pun intended.
If there is, in fact, a government shutdown, it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. Because, you know, I was watching, I watched a clip of Jimmy Kimmel.
That with the horse shit.
Yes, he did a sketch. Actually, we should almost like play this, I think, but he did a sketch where he was explaining the government shutdown.
And it was good.
It was really good, and it was a good metaphor. But more importantly, it's like, wow, to see the effort that is being put in by sort of like cultural figures to explain a government shutdown before it happens, to see, you know, sort of that to me is that could have a serious impact on the ability of the Democrats to sort of stay strong in the face of a shutdown. And, you know, Schumer's up on the heading to the White House right now.
I know. And then asshole who wants to go to Mar-a-Lago for his $250,000 a plate or whatever it is, $100,000 a plate, you know, dinner, whatever. You know, he'll be like, I didn't go and I brought Schumer in and I saved the day. You know, it's the bullshit that is put in our newspapers and on television, and that people fucking believe this shit. Like, that's like, it's, and that, did you read the New York Times with
what?
The op-ed.
Oh, yes.
They said, we're going to devote our op-ed page to Trump support. No, I've heard enough fucking Trump supporters.
Vision, chutzpah, and some testosterone some of the readers said about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Speaking of the New York Times, Can I just give a negative shout out to them for this headline about the discriminatory bills that are going to allow people to basically let trans people die if they want to? Trump gives health workers new religious liberty protections.
Right.
That's the headline in the New York Times.
Right. You know, this is what's wrong with us lefty, liberal, bleeding heart Democrats. This is what's wrong. Oh, please love us. Oh, we don't want to hurt your feelings. We're done with that shit. It's got to stop. We have to stop, like, oh, I don't want to offend you. Fuck offending them. Look at the shit they say. I'm done.
By those standards, Mike's a liberal Democrat. He's always asking to be loved.
Well, listen to one of the people who wrote in. It's from this guy, Philip Mayman, from Greenwich, Connecticut.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, go ahead.
To the editor, I've voted twice in my life. Once for myself when I ran for Congress 10 years ago, and once for Donald Trump last year.
Once! He's voted twice in his fucking life!
Virtually, and here we go.
It's going to be laminated in the White House.
But this is it, right? It's all stories of aggrievement. Virtually all of my friends or colleagues actively hate Mr. Trump. I'm a minority in every circle I move in. Says this white guy from Greenwich, Connecticut. I'm a minority in every circle I move in. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I have a PhD from the University of Chicago and a bachelor's and master's degree from Harvard. I'm a former hedge fund trader and now academic. I'm a journalist and author, and he's a minority in every circle he runs in.
So hard. Imagine. It's so hard for him.
Imagine being a Trump supporter in even one of
professor.
Those circles.
He's a professor of analytics and finance.
Can you imagine the horror of being a Trump supporter in a hedge fund trader circle?
Yeah, get out of your bubble for a second. Imagine this guy wants to make a fun fag joke. People wouldn't laugh.
Okay.
We learned to stay quiet.
Here's what I
want
to say.
How's he doing? I want to continue to read this. How he's doing... He has turned a fragile nation, quote unquote, anti-fragile. Before Mr. Nothing Trump, solid. We were scared of any volatility. Oh no, ISIS. Oh no, banks. The more chaos there was, the worse we were. Now, volatility is our friend. The more chaos, the better. Entrepreneurship up. Optimism up. Good old American problem solving is back. You know who loves change? Capitalists. Mr. Trump has led us on that spiritual exodus. I mean, I don't even know how to respond to this.
You know what he does? I'll tell you what he does. He jerks off to a poster of himself when he ran for Congress 10 years ago. That's what he does. Okay?
I was the best.
You know what really burns my ass about these letters? Is that they can have these Republican points of view for balance, but they can't include any kind of significant representation of anti-war voices or social democrats. Even people who voted for Bernie in the primary. Like, where are we?
Or families that were ripped apart this week.
Sorry. If you look at the last one, Alexander Goldstein, one of my people.
I'm still not like you,
Alex. Before I respond to your questions, I have a question of my own. Did you run similar surveys for Obama voters? Or for that matter, Eisenhower voters? Trump voters are not circus freaks to be displayed or singled out. Yes, you are. I mean, there's not a decent bone in his body. It's unbelievable. It's like this woman from Austin. What I like least about his presidency so far is the tweeting. It's often immature and lowers the tone of the debate while debasing the office of the presidency. That said, I think the media needs to be a lot more even-handed in its coverage of him and keep its personal opinions in check. Really?
Sometimes the tweeting interferes.
Is fucking show him talking. That's all you need. What personal opinion? It's common decency. Oh, sorry.
Sometimes the tweeting interferes with me ripping apart El Salvadoran and Haitian families. So
yeah, it's a fair point. It's true. I get it.
How?
Yeah.
Did you see Jeanine Pirro? Judge Jeanine Pirro, how she opened last night at their Mar-a-Lago or wherever they were?
Oh, God.
Sure, no. It was good.
She wrote, yeah, she was really good. And she wrote, well, she apparently, I'm paraphrasing, so don't, you know. But she said, wow, well, this place is certainly not a shithole.
Judge Jeanine. Wow.
That was good. So funny.
Hey, she's Jeanine, would you like me to have intercourse in you for about 10 seconds?
About the fat fuck Chris Christie?
I was just going to bring that up. I was just going to bring that up. The two-term Republican who left office on January 16th was blocked from a VIP entrance he had used for 8 years at, this is at Newark Liberty International Airport, and directed to stand in TSA screening lines at Terminal B like anyone else. This is according to a person familiar with the incident.
You fat fucking piece of shit. Sorry.
No, this is such a great story.
Oh my God, look at his face.
I mean, that
he looks so ashen and upset when he realizes he cannot go into that. Oh, is that? We don't know if that's actually from there. I would hope so, but I don't think it is. Yeah, I would have paid thousands of dollars just to watch him go. Them go like, I'm sorry, sir, you're not the governor anymore.
You know what? That's the highlight part. But I want to watch the part where he takes his shoes off.
That's right.
I want him to have a rematch.
How can he do it?
Remember that video where that guy was like, hey, you fucking suck. And he's like, are you the governor? I'm the fucking governor. I want that guy to come back.
I know. What about when he screamed at the teacher? Like, oh, God. Why can't I be there when this shit happens?
I honestly.
How great would that have been?
I wonder if we could actually just sort of like write to his office now or whatever and say, can we just get an advance notice the next time you're having to do anything?
Yeah, when next time he's traveling out of Newark?
Next time you're traveling, falling off of a chair at a radio station, speaking. Next time you're at a baseball game. That was where that happened. That was the baseball game.
I wish there were people who were actually paid to just sort of like chase him around for the next just 3-4 months just to mock him.
Yeah.
That's actually a good idea. I think we can come across partisan boundaries to do that together. I mean, that's the thing about Trump. You got to give Trump credit. Nobody's humiliated Chris Christie more than Donald Trump.
Well,
there's a lot of scumbag on scumbag violence in this time.
That's right. Yeah. Christie humiliated himself quite a bit. But I love the idea that he's specifically not a VIP anymore.
What about when he went on the beach? Like, if you look like him, you know, would you say, you know what? I don't care how many pictures they take of me sitting here on the beach. Like they're so unaware of how they present themselves to the world. Like they're just clueless. It's like you're a fat, disgusting bully. Liar.
The biggest problem is that he's ugly on the inside. And it's
no, wrong. Judy's right. The biggest problem is that he's an enormous blimp on the outside. I don't care about
the but talking about, and he's talking about addiction. He's going to talk about addiction. You are addicted to food, you fuck. You're addicted to food. Talk about that.
That picture on the beach is not about on the inside. That's pure outside.
But I feel like, aside from my not wanting to engage in any fat shaming, I would say that it's not hard for me to find plenty of examples of people who are that heavy, who I look at, who I don't find the repulsiveness
I've made the country
Chris
resilient, but not the majority report.
Because of what is inside that guy.
True repulsiveness comes from within, just like true beauty.
That's the thing, is that I don't believe in body shaming except for him and Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Donald Trump.
Of course.
But Because they're evil. It's like, look, I'm overweight. I'm 6'2". I've struggled with weight, but but I'm a good person. You know, I'm not an asshole. It's like, look at you. You take up too much space in my head and in physically. You know, you're just like, who are you? Like, I don't know. It's like Harvey Weinstein. It's fat, pockmarked, ugly. And he thinks in his head, oh, I'm going to fuck that hot actress. Like, where does that come from? A woman has a wrinkle or a blemish and is like, oh, I can't go out. And these fat fucks are walking around like they're the most powerful people in the universe.
And Sarah Huckabee Sanders going, I'm lying at you with both eyes, okay?
I know.
And it works.
Yeah. I don't know.
Roxane Gay has a tweet up that
I love her last name.
It's controversial, but
Matt has just thrown up.
She lost patience in the same way.
Stop asking me to chastise people for body shaming Donald Trump. For one, I am not a vending machine or the soul police. But also, it's not good to body shame anyone, not even the worst person in the world. But you are not better or closer to God for going out of your way to defend Trump's body.
Word,
fuck him. He's a racist, ignorant asshole.
Yes.
He's deporting Americans, raising your taxes, taking your health care, and ruining us internationally. He's literally the worst. Save your righteousness and fight for everyone who is slightly less terrible or actually deserving. And he doesn't weigh 239 pounds. It's okay to point that out. Everyone lies about their weight, for fuck's sake.
I also just thinking, especially,
but the doctor lied about his weight. And he's a guy who judges women by the way they look. So who the fuck are you?
Yeah, but two wrongs don't make a right. Like, I worry that when we fat shame Trump, we are also fat shaming people who are not involved in any way, shape, or form with Trump.
But two wrongs don't necessarily make anything more than two wrongs either.
Two wrongs make
a right. They may not make a right, but you know.
Two wrongs make fun. I also think that in Trump's case specifically, like, I mean, it's not just a question of his. I mean, he literally looks grotesque. And that is absolutely a reflection of who he is in a very distinct way that you can't cut from his physicality. I mean, you can't.
I mean, if he looked like Mitt Romney, he'd be just as terrible.
But he's also, he would. But he's also, like Mike Pence is disgusting and horrible. But he is someone who brings up the way people look constantly. Marco Rubio's hands, Carly Fiorina's face. Like, he brings this shit up.
Well, she had that coming. I mean, Rubio, I felt bad about the hands, but Kylie, no.
No, Rubio triggered him because Rubio's younger. Did you ever watch that clip where Trump, I think he was with some idiots on MSNBC, and he literally said, he's like, I think I look better than Rubio. I think a lot of people would agree. Do you agree?
Oh, God. I don't know. I just don't. How much more of this?
How much more?
How much more of this?
23.
How much
3 years? I mean, it's going to be 3 years. However, it's possible that, you know, after 2018, he's going to be a much different person, right? He's going to feel like under a lot more pressure, it seems to me. Very possibly, which, you know, might be cathartic.
It will be amazing
country,
to
right?
watch like him have a heart attack and deny it's
honestly,
happening in real time.
Yeah,
that will be awesome.
Like you don't, you know, I mean, I would prefer if he just went away tomorrow. We never saw him again. But if he's going to be here,
right,
I wouldn't mind like a 2 year long sort of torturous exit for him. I think that would be important and cathartic for the country. Maybe they could pass a law that he has to be in the stockades for the first hour every day, on the steps of the Capitol.
And
or
Bernie's
something.
America, baby.
There you go.
I love it.
Now, Judy, I know you have, you're working on a deadline, but I want to remind everybody that on the 30th, Donald Trump is going to give his State of the Union. And I mean, I can already guess that the State of the Union is going to be great and better than it's ever been, maybe.
Oh, it's tremendous. It's going to be tremendous.
And we are hoping that you, Judy Gold, will come in studio, yeah, not only to give us running commentary during the State of the Union.
Oh, my God.
But to provide a rebuttal to the State of the Union, because I don't...
So good. The Democrats, 2018. Fuck you!
When liberals stop being polite and start getting real.
I would never watch this anymore.
I am so in, and you better play my theme song.
Oh, yes. We have actually multiple theme songs. We have two theme songs for you.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
We'll do both theme songs. We'll do like the... Bah, bah. Instead of that, we'll do your theme songs.
I both can like really wait and not can't wait. Like, I can't wait for
what
Judy.
Do you
I
want?
Can wait for
we,
this.
We're going to talk. Like, what do you want for a background? Because we're going to try and do this right. So that you have like...
Oh, that's a good idea.
So you
got to
tell me, think about like if you want to look like
Trump
you're
playing
in a,
tennis.
In a you know, some type of like library, or if you want whatever it is that you want, we're going to try and come up with one.
As sophisticated as possible so that when I use my colorful language, it really hits home.
Right.
Okay?
Okay. Fair enough. Maybe we'll...
And I think that you guys should sit behind me you know, and just nod and stare at me. Like,
I think we need like have know. Really serious like poker faces. Like we're you know what
right.
you should think
like of, the majority leader, yeah,
yes,
and the vice president. Yeah.
Or like Parliament in the UK. Like we're sitting on the front bench as
we're gonna figure out
responds.
How to do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Down.
Well, Judy,
by the way, I want you to know that video that you posted, that you're one of the first people who posted the video of the guy from Mexico having to go, who was here for 30 years.
Right.
That was heart-wrenching.
Horrible.
Heart-wrenching. Having to watch him say goodbye to his family because of this fucking disgusting... I mean, I just... This is not the country we live in. I just don't understand it.
It's really bad. It's really scary. Because you know this, it's the idea of that we're sending a guy to Mexico who's been here for 30 years, who has a family
since
he's 9 years old. And, you know, this is a fate that could happen to literally hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of DACA folk. And then, of course, there's a whole nother. I mean, there's many more who are not DACA. This guy was not DACA, who have been here for this long and ripping apart families. And the idea that it doesn't provoke, I don't know, people chaining themselves up to, you
right.
know, whatever. It's scary. It's scary. And, you know, on one hand, I understand why it doesn't provoke that. People don't know about it. They don't know what to do about it. There's marches. Don't forget, folks, there's marches all across the country tomorrow, women's marches. Check your local listings.
But, yeah. You better go march.
Yep. All right, Judy.
Okay. I'm marching with Stormy Daniels. All right.
Judy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
I love you guys, and
love
I hate
back.
Him. Okay.
Talk to you soon.
You know, you can't really understand what a true piece of ass is until you have a daughter. And then, through her, you learn what hotness really is. It's unbelievable. Isn't it unbelievable?
Very sweet sentiment.
There's a lot of misogynist sentiment that sex workers can't be free from STDs, but... In porn, there's very rigorous testing.
Very
That's why I don't protect
Very clean.
Very clean. That's why I don't protect sex with a girl that reminds me of my daughter.
I want to go to Jimmy Reefer Cake, but while we were talking with Judy, we mentioned that story of Jorge Garcia and his family. His wife is an American citizen. His two children are American citizens, one of whom I think is 12, the other I think maybe 15. He had been in this country for 30 years. He was brought here when he was 9 years old. Been in this country for 30 years. The View, I guess, I don't know, reunited the family via video. Here they are. Here is Jorge talking to the people on The View, and his wife is in studio. And let's just listen to this clip. I mean, it's really heartbreaking.
Okay. So, you can see your dad.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say?
We love you. We miss you. We want to hug you. Stay strong. Do you want to say anything to your dad?
I love you guys too.
So like.
It's okay, baby. Thank you all for coming, because I think it's important for people to understand this is not some random conversation that people, this is real people's lives. Mm-hmm. This is real people's lives. And if you want to help, elect the people who are going to make sure that this does not happen again. We'll be
right. I mean, good for them on The View.
I mean, things have been bad in immigrants in this poor immigrants in this country for a pretty long time. This isn't something new that Trump invented. But if these new levels of cravenness are going to wake up liberals to the realities of what needs to change, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this many times on the show. Barack Obama, deported a record number of people. But this is far worse.
It also,
and I don't know, they had as a practice would have deported somebody who had been here for 30 years with two kids.
No, it's a significant escalation. I mean, it doesn't excuse the previous.
It doesn't. And I'm not even sure it's on the same necessarily continuum. I don't know. I mean, I'm not familiar enough with who the folks were that were sent back, but. My sense is that in these type of instances were,
my understanding from people like Reagan is that this type of person was definitely not only not under Obama, like not under Bush,
right?
Not under Clinton,
right?
Well, and you also wonder how you call back the culture that's going to exist for the next 3 years under Trump, like ICE is just gonna it's already completely broken, should be disbanded, but like you let them run rampant for
right.
three more years.
Right. It's not like, they're developing some type of muscle memory, and putting the brakes on something like this is not gonna be easy. It's going to take a tremendous amount of effort. All right, let's listen to Jimmy Reefer Cake's song. Now we're gonna head into the fun half. But let me just tell you this. For those of you who are listening or watching live, we are anticipating a special guest on the program in about 50 minutes.
I'm running late, Rachel.
In about 50 minutes. And so... what we'll do for our freebie listeners is we'll probably include this, or maybe we'll put out a special episode. I'm not sure what we'll do, but maybe we'll just cut the fun half out and include this interview, because it's the senator from Vermont who, I'm not saying which one, not going to say which one, but we're anticipating a phone call from.
A special episode or a very special episode?
Well, we'll see. We'll figure out something, folks. So we're going to take a break. If we end up sticking on the back of this freebie show, then we will do that. But let's play Jimmy Reefer Cake before we go to the fun half.
One time for the ladies.
Marijuana on the Schedule One is absolutely absurd. Mandatory minimum sentence laws should be torn up and burned. Eric Holder wrote some memos that are now being overturned by Jefferson, a Blaugan, Sessions the Turd. Oh, please don't be tweeting me, acting like everything be great with Hillary. She never supported legalization, and as a result, Trump won over the nation. Now the Dems listen to me. Better legalize weed, or you'll be the victim of your own hypocrisy. Don't you be like Jefferson, Beauregard, Sessions the Turd, a man widely described and recognized as a human turd. He's a human turd. He's a human turd. He's a human turd. Oh, he's a human turd. Oh, Jeffrey Sessions. Oh, God. He's a human turd.
What? Pot's dangerous, wow. Kids. Careful with how you consume it. So, wait, I like the argument there is interesting. So, Hillary did not, if we're, I'm assuming he's not talking about the Republican base that voted for Trump. So the sort of like couple of the several hundred thousand voters in swing states who potentially flipped to Trump because they were scammed by his false populism, it was really a weed thing. If Hillary had kind of said, Wisconsin, no jobs but weed.
I mean, I think maybe. I think it's quite possible that a more full-throated support of pot would have brought out more voters.
Where, though?
I don't know.
I doubt in Wisconsin.
I don't know.
I mean, she should have, because pot should be legal regardless, but I don't think it's the silver electoral bullet.
I mean, it'll. I think Democrats will be missing an opportunity if they don't make more of an issue of it this time around.
Yeah.
But we'll see, because you know, in this instance, there's a very clear dichotomy that is just sitting there. Now, maybe some people might see it anyways, because no Clinton administration would be doing or attempting to do what the Trump administration is doing in terms of the states.
It's like I always say, smoke weed every day.
So Jamie, before we go, more details on this DSA party, the winter of our discotheque.
Yes. So it is a fundraiser for the North Brooklyn DSA branch and all the exciting projects we have coming up. We just voted on two priorities, which are healthcare and housing, which I think a lot of our listeners care about. Oh yeah, we got a cute little flyer. We've got some real music people DJing, including Liz Pelly and Jeremy Larson from Pitchfork. My friend Frank Jones, Mr. Frank, is performing live, and he's a very good hype man, very sexy, very fun. And I will be DJing at the after party, which is just around the corner at Father Knows Best. So this is open to the public. And I hope everyone comes and has a super fun time. It's going to be lit. It's literally going to be lit.
It's going to be tonight.
Lights and fog machines.
It's going to be tonight.
It is tonight at Trans Picos from 8 to 12. And the after party is from 12 to 4. So
wow.
Come socialize
party
with socialists.
Until 4 in the morning. Whoa.
The suggested donation is $15 at least, but nobody will be turned away at the door for lack of funds.
There you go. And Michael, you reached your 1,000-person patron plateau.
We're at actually 1,007 now. So
and
thanks,
you've
everybody.
You've superseded it.
We're going to keep going, obviously, but the things that we promised for the 1,000 are going to happen now. So begin working on some animation soon, and Matt are going to play Wolfenstein. I don't know the date on that yet, but I want to thank everybody. And the show's really, really good. You should check it out and get all the content.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half, and if you are a freebier, we will tag on, hopefully, our surprise guest, who will be with us in about, hopefully, 45 minutes. All right, we're going to get a call here in about 2 minutes, and why don't we take a break here for a moment? We'll take a little musical break, and then we'll come back on.
so fair, let it go on along. Octopus for good, you got that cherry bomb. Blow out that cherry bomb. For me, we lost it long ago.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome to this program the senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Sam.
So give us a sense of what's happening in the Senate in terms of the funding of the government going forward.
Well, I think it comes down, Sam, to a pretty simple issue. I think by now... He may not have known this a few days ago, but I think by now Senator McConnell, the Republican leader, understands that he does not have the 60 votes he needs to pass a one-month continuing resolution. And the reason he doesn't have the votes is that Democrats and a growing number of Republicans are sick and tired of trying to run a $4 trillion operation, i.e. the United States government, on a month-to-month basis. And just last night, the Pentagon issued a statement saying that they cannot continue to function effectively month by month. They need an annual budget, which is what we need. So he doesn't have the votes, and I think that may have occurred to him or at least dawned on him today. And he is now going to have to sit down and negotiate in a way that he has not done before. And what that means is dealing with three fundamental issues. Number one, parity for defense and non-defense spending. There are enormous economic problems facing the working families of this country, whether it's the need to refund the Community Health Center program, whether it's the need to deal with pensions, to deal with student debt, to deal with infrastructure, you name it. There are problems that we cannot continue to kick the can down the road on. Second of all, we have got to deal with the Dreamers issue. A poll came out yesterday. You may have seen it from CBS. 87% of the American people say that we should provide legal status to the Dreamers, and many of them believe they should get a path towards citizenship. This is not particularly controversial. It's what the American people want. We got to do that. And thirdly, we have to deal with disaster relief of Florida, Texas, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. That's it. And within the Senate, actually, I think, you know, compromises will be struck. I certainly will not get everything I want. But we can reach an agreement. But McConnell has got to understand he's going to have to negotiate.
I mean, it sounds all he doesn't. Never mind 60 votes. It doesn't even sound like he may even have 50 votes, which is pretty amazing.
That's correct. That is correct. And I think the difficulty is that in the past, and probably in the beginning of this process, he kind of thought, well, you know, the Democrats, they're just going to go along with it. They're too afraid to stand up and fight back. But what we have seen in the last few shutdowns is more and more. In the beginning, there were just a few of us. And then there were 30. And now I think we're somewhere around 40. And what is also true is a number of Republicans are saying, you know, for good reasons. I mean, their philosophy is very different than mine. But you go to any business CEO and you say, hey, try to run your business, a large business, on a month-to-month basis and say, you're crazy.
Right.
It's wasteful. It's irresponsible. You can't do it. And that's what a number of Republicans understand.
So in the event that Mitch McConnell does sit down and does try and craft some type of compromise where to the extent that you can that you have a sense of this, what are the red lines? Like, what will you not walk away from?
Well, let me just say, rather than looking at it that way, I would say that there's got to be a strong compromise dealing with Dreamers, which means maintaining the legal status of all of the Dreamers and providing a path toward citizenship and protecting their parents as well and doing more. So I want a strong Dreamers bill. As you know, Durbin and Lindsey Graham have worked on something. Doesn't go as far as I would like, but it is a start.
Right.
And I think we can rally support around that. Now, where, you know, I'm not all that comfortable. You know, the Republicans want to spend zillions of dollars on border security. I think there's a lot of technology out there that We can maintain border security for a lot less cost than Trump wants to do. That, you know, I may have to give more than I would like on that issue. On the issue of parity, I think there cannot be a compromise. We have had, and again, I know this sounds very inside the beltway, but it really impacts every American. What the Republicans have agreed to, what we have agreed to, since 2011, when we did the first budget act, is for every dollar you spend on the military, you spend it on domestic needs. And we have so many needs in this country. That has got to be maintained. And again, where the fight will be, another fight will be, is how much do you spend on disaster relief? What kind of, you know, help does Puerto Rico get? There'll be arguments about that. But I suspect we could reach an agreement.
And in the event that you do reach a compromise in the Senate, then what happens? It's got to go back to the House. And then that's a question of, you know, how many Democrats will sign on to help, because the Republicans doesn't sound like they'll be able to pass something like that in the House.
Well, you know, Republicans, you know, they are very right wing, but they're not stupid. And they're looking at the political world, and the political world right now, for them, you saw the results in the state Senate election in Wisconsin early this week. You saw what happened in Alabama. You saw what happened on November 7th. The American people are sick and tired of a right-wing extremist government and an unstable president. And when you have Republicans controlling the House, the Senate, and the White House, I know who the American people are going to hold accountable for this shutdown. So I think our Republican colleagues over in the House, they may not like what they're going to have to do, but they're going to have to do it.
In the coming week or so, I know you're intending to roll out a Medicare for All. How is that going to do? I mean, are you going to be doing single bills that will ultimately provide a comprehensive Medicare for All program, or is it going to be in one bill? How's that going to work?
Well, we have a bill. We have a bill which has, I think, 15 or 16 co-sponsors and a whole lot of support in the House as well. It is essentially a Medicare for All bill. Medicare is a very successful and popular program in this country. We take it for granted, but if you ask seniors, they're very appreciative and supportive of the Medicare program that currently exists. And what people are saying, if it works for people 65 and older, why don't we make it available to everybody? Why don't we do what every other major country on earth is doing? What we're going to be doing on Tuesday night is, I think, for the first time ever, doing a live town meeting on Medicare for All. We're going to have some really great panels, people talking about what goes on in other countries, what the current dysfunctional system is doing to the American people, how the high cost of healthcare in this country impacts our economy and the business community. It's going to be very interesting. And we're going to be live streaming it, not through the corporate media, but doing it through three digital outlets. So that's going to be quite an interesting enterprise.
I think we may actually be doing a simulcast of that as
fantastic.
Well on, love to on have our you. Channel. What happens? I mean, where are the efforts going into 2018, right? Because that is the next big that seems to me to be growing in importance, taking back at least one of the houses of government.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. And there are a lot of efforts going into that. And if I have anything to say about it, and I do have a little bit to say about it, the effort is going to be not just on raising zillions of dollars and putting that money into TV ads and hiring expensive consultants. It is going to be building strong grassroots movements, increasing voter turnout, raising political consciousness in this country. I think I'm not speaking out of school here when I say that anyone who objectively looks at where the Democratic Party has been for the last many years will see that their model of how they function has been a failure. Obama won two elections. That's good. But they have lost close to 1,000 legislative seats all over this country. And we have got to begin the effort at a grassroots level to take back state legislatures, city councils, school boards. And I can tell you right now, this week, I beg your pardon, it's not this week, shortly, there will be many, many hundreds of young people and working people coming to Washington, D.C., who are going to be running for office at the local and state level, many of them for the first time, who are going to receive some training about how to run effective campaigns from a variety of progressive organizations here. So the goal is increase voter turnout, raise public and political consciousness, and let's start winning seats that in the past we did not win. And the other point is, Democrats cannot be successful long-term unless they have a 50-state strategy. It is beyond belief that in half the states of this country, there is virtually no real Democratic Party. In Alabama, where Doug Jones ended up winning, what he concluded very early on is there was not a Democratic Party in Alabama. He had to build his own successful effort. But we need Democratic parties in Alabama and Mississippi and Wyoming and Nevada, all over this country.
And are you seeing indications that that's happening out of the DNC?
I am. You know, at the end of the primary election, Secretary Clinton and I sat down and we agreed about the need for what we ended up calling a Democratic Unity Commission. And that had people from Clinton's camp and from my camp and some other people. And they set about looking at four major areas of concern with the goal of creating a much more dynamic and open Democratic Party. Issue number one was the issue of superdelegates, which I think most people understand in the past. Is we just cannot continue a situation where many, many hundreds, I think it was over 700 in the 2016 election, superdelegates accountable really to no electorate, were able to vote however they wanted, despite what may have happened in their states. So we're taking a hard look at superdelegates, and I think we're going to make some very, very significant reductions in the number of superdelegates who will cast votes in the next presidential primary. Issue number two, you have states in this country, New York comes to mind as the worst example, where you will have to register as a Democrat literally 6 months before the primary to participate. And that is just incredibly undemocratic and restrictive. And that has got to change. And I think there's agreement about that. There's agreement about changes in caucuses so people can vote by absentee ballot. There's also agreement that the DNC itself has got to be a much more open and democratic structure. People do not know, I think, where the money goes, how people are hired, what the strategy is. It has got to be much more from the bottom on up than from the top on down. And we're making progress in those areas.
And lastly, about the getting back to 2018, do you think there needs to be a nationalized Democratic message beyond, you know, put a check on Trump? Or and if so, what should that message be?
The answer is yes, I do. I think it will be a losing strategy to simply point out that we have a pathological liar who is president, somebody who changes his mind every day, somebody who is a racist, and all the other things we know about Trump. I'm sure that will appeal to all of the anti-Trump people, but if we're going to win elections, we have to do more than that. And that means we have to develop an agenda that makes sense to ordinary people. We have to analyze the problems that working families are facing and then come up with solutions to them. I think that the idea of a Medicare for all single-payer program is an idea which is gaining support every single day all over this country. So it's not simply a question of preventing Republicans from throwing 30 million people off of health insurance. It's moving to guarantee health care to all people in a cost-effective way. That's issue number one. I think creating millions of decent paying jobs by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. Very, very important. I think pay equity for women. This is the year 2018. Women should not be making 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. I think the idea of making public colleges and universities is an idea, by the way, which is growing all over this country. I was in San Francisco a number of months ago, and their college is now tuition free, and they've seen a significant increase in the number of people who are attending that college, raising the minimum wage. We're seeing great gains in that area in communities all over America, but at least people should be making $15 an hour. Dealing with, you know, despite Trump's insanity regarding climate change. The overwhelming majority of the American people know that we're looking at disasters all over this planet because of climate change, and that we have to transform our energy system. So those are just, you know, dealing with net neutrality. Net neutrality is a big issue. Moving to the decriminalization of marijuana is a big issue. So there are a lot of issues out there that I think will bring people into the political process rather than just talking about Trump all day long.
All right, one last question, and because I know you got to go on the on the government shutdown. In the event that there is, how much staying power do you think the Democrats will have in terms of holding together? Because if we start getting out, I mean, I'm not convinced that Donald Trump doesn't perceive a shutdown in his best interest. He may be right. He may be wrong. I would imagine he's wrong. But how much, you know, with Democrats are far more concerned about the people who are going to be hurt, I think, of this than Republicans in many respects. I mean, so how long can Democrats hold out?
Well, that is a, you know, Sam, that's a very good question. And obviously, you know, I can't give you a definitive answer. I don't know. But this is what I can tell you, because these are my colleagues and I talk to them every day. There are a variety of reasons as to why people are prepared not to support a one-month continuing resolution. And for the more conservative members, their reasoning is pretty straightforward. And they are saying, look, we got a $4 trillion government. It is totally irresponsible and wasteful to try to run this on a month-by-month basis. You cannot. Yesterday, very, very interesting, and I think a significant addition to this whole debate, a tweet was sent out, I don't know if you saw this, from the Pentagon. From the Pentagon. Yes. This is what they said. We have been working under a continuing resolution for 3 years now. Our current CR expires tomorrow. This is wasteful and destructive. We need a fully funded fiscal year 18 budget or face ramifications on our military. And that's true. But it's not just the military. So when you have the military saying you can't run a government month to month, you're the Secretary of Defense. How the hell do you run a military month to month? You need long-term planning. So I think a lot of the more conservative Democrats are making clear that is a great concern to them. And I don't think that's going to change.
And I mean, is there a document out there? I mean, these are numbers that theoretically, right? This is not a surprise that there's going to be a need for a budget that theoretically should go longer than a month. And my understanding is a month makes it easy so that people don't have to make real hard decisions,
right.
You know, and vote for something that may contain things that they have an issue with. But is there a document? I mean, like, how long is it going to take to actually get one that would be a, you know, a genuine fiscal 2018 budget?
Sam, I think it could be done a lot faster than you think.
Okay.
All right. Because, you know, I think there is absolutely majority support. Yeah, there'll be disagreements, but they can be worked on. How much money should we spend to rebuild Puerto Rico? Well, I have a number. Somebody else has a number. But I think we can work it out. How much money should we spend for the Defense Department? There'll be disagreements on that. But ultimately, I think a compromise will be reached. Should we fund non-defense needs at the same level as defense? Well, we've done that for previous budgets. Yeah, I think we could do it on a fifth. So I think we're not that far apart. But the key point is that Mitch McConnell has got to understand he has to negotiate. Once he does that, I think we can make some progress.
Senator Bernie Sanders, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate you joining us. And, of course, I appreciate your work.
Well, you too. Keep up the good work, Sam. Take care.
Bye-bye. It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the
shifted